Quorum being present, we will commence our meeting for the Committee on Commerce and Regulatory Reform. And we're going to change the order of the agenda just a little bit here and go first with House File 2216. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and I appreciate the committee's indulgence in letting us do this bill first. We're working on an amendment. Staff is working on an amendment for Representative Stensrud's bill, so we'll do this one, and hopefully by the time we're done with this, they'll have the amendment done, and then we can do the window washing bill. I would like to move House File 2216 so it's properly before us. It is a bill dealing with MCHA. I think it's a bipartisan, relatively non-controversial bill, and I do have an expert here to explain exactly what it is and what it does, and with that, I will turn it over to the expert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. House File 22.
Mr. Erickson, would you please identify yourself for the record before you begin? Thank you.
I'm nervous, too, when I do this.
So am I.
Except you and I live in the same district.
You're both doing fine.
My name is Kirby Erickson. I am the executive director of the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. I should tell you that I am also fairly new in the position, having joined the organization in July. But I do appreciate the opportunity to be here today. What is in front of you as House File 2216 is what we might call a housekeeping bill. There are four minor amendments that all relate to bringing our regulatory environment up to date. The first of those is what is known as Section 1 in the summary before you. It, in the first paragraph, deals with a simpler way of setting premiums for our Medicare product. The Medicare product today has diminished down to only about 400 members, and instead of having a very complex premium setting process, we have opted for language in this set of amendments which will simplify that. The second part of Section 1 really relates to a mechanism in which we would move our annual premium setting date from July 1 to January 1. This is primarily to put us in sync with the other public programs, Medicare and Medicaid, and allows us to match them in terms of the time of the year when most premium changes take place. Section 2 relates to a rate setting process that allows us to move our rate setting to a midpoint of the current year or the year that is in effect. It's a slight change in the way we have done business. Section 3 relates to the commissioner again having the right to look at various factors in setting our premium. As you know, we have premiums that are set based on what the market is rather than what our costs are, and it entails a very complicated process where we bring an actuary in, and the actuarial firm then does a survey of all of the premiums that are in the market. They determine what the average is, and then that's the basis on which our premiums are set. And what we are asking for now is an opportunity to expand the inventory of programs that we survey to include prospectively offered programs that are not in the market yet but will be, rather than looking just retrospectively. We think for us to really be in tune with what's going on in the market and to have our rates in tune with what's in the market, we need to know what's ahead of us rather than just what's behind us. And so there's an opportunity there for both our actuary and the commissioner to look at a broader array of competitive market pricing. The fourth amendment, or the fourth section, does two things. It will put a moratorium on the continued sale of our $500 deductible and $1,000 deductible products. Again, the rationale for this is based on market presence. Nobody else in the market sells those products anymore. We think it's appropriate for us to put a moratorium on them. The last item relates to a new federal benefit set that you've all heard about, which is in the process of being discussed by the Health Reform Task Force in the state, and there will be an opportunity, perhaps, for MCHA to put that benefit set into our product line come 2014. And it is permissive, it is not required, but it gives us a little more flexibility as we look at the years ahead. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Quick one.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize for being a little bit late. I just, I guess the talking turkey kind of question, what will this do to your rates? Is there anything in here that'll change the rates for a person? You got the people that are in the most vulnerable times of their lives. They can't get insurance anywhere else. They turn to you guys looking for help. Is this going to keep the rates about the same? It's purely technical, or are we likely to see them inch up, or are we going to see something dramatic?
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, sure. I don't see this as having a major impact on the rates. Again, we work off the market, and I think because the market is still very competitive in the individual side, we would expect that our trends would be no different than the regular market. We're looking today at our next premium renewal, which will be in July, will be in the single digits. And so that's our recommendation. I think that will come forward to the commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions of the committee? Thank you, Mr. Erickson. And I believe we have a Mr. Burt to testify.
Mr. Burt is our outside counsel and is available if anybody would like to ask him a question.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else care to testify in this bill, either for or against? I recognize one additional testifier. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Twyla Brace. I'm president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And I came for a different bill, but happened to see here the language on 630 to 632 regarding the essential health benefits set. And this is part of the health care reform law. And I realize that Mr. Erickson said that this was permissive, but from the point of view of our organization, we do not want to put any part of the health care reform law into statute, particularly until after the Supreme Court has ruled on whether or not it's constitutional. So we would oppose the addition of that language.
Thank you, Ms. Braze. Any questions of this witness? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Anything further, Representative Hoppe?
Mr. Chair, I don't think so. I think I would renew my motion that House File 2216 be passed and sent on to the General Register.
Okay, further discussion on the bill? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
House File 2216 has prevailed to pass to the General Register. Representative Stensrud?
Thank you.
Representative Stensrud, do you have a bill before the committee?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would like to move House File 2263 to go to the General Register. And I have been working with some of the concerned parties involved with this, both union members, union representatives, building owners, and also with the Department of Labor and Industry. And we have an A3 amendment that I'd also like to move.
Representative Stensrud, thank you. Is that the amendment that you've been working on with Ms. Newman here at the start of the committee?
Yes, and if you confirm it's A3, is that correct?
Do you want to give us a brief rundown of what that is, or have Ms. Newman do it, and we will vote on that to try to get it in the shape that you want the bill to be in?
Let's see. Maybe to put it in perspective, what the bill does with the amendment, Mr. Chair. In the window cleaning world, actually in another life of mine, I have a window cleaning company, so I appreciate much of what this bill is trying to do. in the high-rise market where window cleaners hang from, you know, many stories. We want to make sure that there's adequate safety measures taken in new construction and in new buildings. So the intention of the bill is to ensure that in new build-outs and in new buildings of four stories and higher, that there are adequate safety tie-offs and safety anchors on the rooftops to be built in. And nobody seems to have a problem with that, and that makes great sense. And it also addressed if there are renovations and like repair work done on those same buildings, existing buildings. And what the amendment does is really addresses that.
Okay. Well, Representative Stensrud, I know we have one testifier to the bill, but is there anyone that wants to come and testify to the amendment? Because we do members all have a copy of the amendment? We didn't have this before committee. I think it does make the bill better. I think it's moving in the right direction. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Stensrud. As I'm reading this, and I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, if a company or a building owner repairs part of the roof, they would, and take it all the way down to the sheet metal or to the deck, they would then have to install these anchors in that portion. Doesn't exempt them from having to do that, or I mean, I can understand, because sometimes they only have to patch or repair parts of a roof. Would that eventually then the whole roof would be replaced and you'd have these anchors all the way around, but if they're only doing a portion, they'd put it in the portion they're doing the repair on?
Yeah. Representative Stensrud.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Nelson. Yeah, it would be the intention that as they're doing, if they're doing a minor repair and they're exposing some of the substructure, installing one or two anchors might not make the project any more safe because it would have negligible difference in the safety of that project. So, but if they're doing a major renovation, that yes, that you would put those in, but it would allow. We put in language to be working with the commissioner for an exception if you're just doing a very minor repair and it really doesn't make reasonable sense to put in a couple of anchors where it doesn't, you know, the cost factors might, there could be an exception.
But Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to ask that question because in one of my previous employers that we, when I worked at a public agency, that there was restrictions on if the money was below a certain amount that they were exempted from prevailing wage, and it seemed like every project that was, no matter how size, they broke it into a small enough amount that they never had to do the prevailing wage, and basically skirting the law. And I guess the intention here, from what I understand, is you want to make these roofs safer for window watchers or washers in the future, so that as they're doing the repairs, I want to make sure that they're not trying to, they can come up with a way to skirt around that so we never have to put these in. So that's why I asked the question, and I think that's what your intention is, to make sure that these roofs are safer to work on.
Yeah. I think that's it. Anybody else? Was there anyone in the crowd that wants to speak for or against this amendment? Otherwise, we'll put the amendment on and move on to the bill as amended. Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A3 amendment is adopted. The bill is now in the shape that the author would like to the bill. And I know we have at least one person that wants to speak, come down and testify. Mr. Ingebretson. Come on down whenever you're ready, if you want to come down and identify yourself for the record and tell us what we want to know, or what you want us to know, rather, we'd appreciate it. Welcome.
My name is Kevin Ingebretson. I've been a window washer for 18 years, and I just had made my statement the last time. If there are any questions I can answer, from what I know, I will.
Okay. Just I have a general question for you. Is Representative Stensrud on the right track here? Is this a good bill?
I think so. It's on the right track. You know, there's going to have to be a lot more progress in years, but yeah, it is a good.
Okay. Members, any questions? Is there anyone else in it? Thank you, Mr. Ingebretson. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill as amended? Not seeing anybody. Any further questions, members? I think we're ready to move on and vote on this. Representative Stensrud, we'll give you the final word if you want one.
All right. Appreciate your support. I'll just renew my motion to send 2263 as amended to the General Register.
Representative Stensrud renews his motion that House File 2263, as amended, be approved and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We are on to Representative Hackbarth. And while while Representative Hackbarth is coming down, I don't think we approved the minutes earlier. Representative Davids, have you had a moment to look at the minutes from the February 21st meeting?
Yes, I move minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Davids moves the minutes. Members, any questions? Seeing none, those in favor of the minutes from the telecom hearing yesterday, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you. The minutes from yesterday are approved. Thank you, Representative Davids and members. The bill in front of us is House File 2211. I will go ahead and move that. It does say at the top of the bill that the author is Representative Swedzinski. He remains a co-author, but Representative Hackbarth is going to be the new author on the bill and is with us today. And I am going to move that House File 2211, it came to us from State Government Finance, and I'm going to move that we do our regulatory reform due diligence on this and send it back to State Government Finance. Representative Lanning and some of the other members of that committee expressed a desire to see this again, so we will accede to their wishes and send it back to them. With that, Representative Hackbarth, welcome to the committee, and fire away.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Pretty straightforward bill. It put the two-year moratorium on the agency's rulemaking ability. And it's primarily because of regulatory reform that we're looking at this year and a number of other bills that are coming forward in that regard for business purposes, and just kind of take a two-year break from rulemaking. I understand that some of the folks in State Government Finance have some issues that they may be looking at and maybe creating some exemptions for this bill. So we may be looking at that sort of thing in State Government Finance. So it's really pretty straightforward. We do have the good cause exemption in the bill, and which would allow for some emergency rulemaking. But with that, Mr. Chairman, I would stand for any questions. Pretty straightforward.
Thank you, Representative Hackbarth. Seeing no questions, we'll move on and vote on the Sorry, I thought they'd be funnier. Is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify for or against, or are there members that have specific questions for Representative Hackbarth? I see almost everybody in the audience getting up and heading down, so we'll... Commissioner Peterson, if you want to... You seem to be first up. Please feel free.
Mr. Chair, if I might...
Representative Atkins.
Is this going to come back to our committee then after it gets gutted or changed or whatever in State Government Finance?
Representative Atkins, I devoutly hope not.
Because I'm a little concerned what's going to happen here is, you know, they get a couple bites at the apple. We're not even going to see what the bill really is. You know, I mean, we pass it out of here. We have no idea what it's, and I'm guessing there's going to be plenty of exemptions based on what I'm hearing. And, you know, when it gets to the floor, it won't even resemble what came through committee. Why are we doing this exercise if it's just going to go back there and be sliced and diced and not look like what it is today?
Well, Representative Atkins, that's a good question. And I can certainly talk to Representative Lanning and see either we can get it back or get a summary of it and find out what they did to it after if it passes out of their committee.
Why don't we just send it back now, and then once they've done their efforts, well, then it'll, because it'll be fresh. What I'm concerned about, we'll get the testimony today. A couple weeks from now, Mr. Chairman, it'll come back to this committee, not resembling what it did or what it was today or came out of there as. And we'll be sitting here with a bunch of folks that have already testified, trying to rely on our memories from 2 weeks ago about what their comments were. Why not just send it back, let them do their work, and then bring it back to the committee like it would most appropriately do?
Well, it's also possible, and I understand what you're saying, it's also possible that they will take a look at the bill and not make any further changes and set it on to Ways and Means or wherever else it's supposed to go after that. So let's hear from people today, and maybe we can make some good progress on the bill and send it to them, and they'll do with it what they will.
Just one final question.
Sure.
Could the chief author or the new chief author or whatever this is maybe give us a sense of what the exemptions, because my guess is we may raise some of the same concerns that were raised in the last committee if we're sensing that those are going to be issues that go back to it might help our questions a little bit, and maybe the testifiers might be able to kind of be more surgical in what their comments are.
Well, Representative Hatbarth can do that, and I think for all of the people that want to come down and testify, I think we are going to be pretty narrowly focused on this bill. It's a pretty potentially, well, maybe more than potentially, a pretty broad, wide-ranging bill, and I think we want to narrow the focus to the regulatory reform aspects of it rather than, you know, the broader generalities of the bill. Representative Hackbarth, do you want to comment on that?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Atkins. As you can see, I just took over this bill, and I understand that Representative Lanning wanted to get the bill back. He had some of his members of his committee that had some concerns and wanted to look at it again, so he's asking for it back. What those are, I don't know. I haven't had those discussions with him. So,
and Mr. Chair, I agree. We should limit our discussion and questions just to things that impact businesses and consumers.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Commissioner Peterson, welcome.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Members, I'm Ken Peterson, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. Thanks for the opportunity to come and speak before you about House File 2211. The administration has opposed the bill because we think that it goes too far and stops necessary rulemaking along with unnecessary rulemaking. If the rulemaking is stopped, then the rulemaking is stopped on what appears to be the range up to now, then the legislature is going to find itself dealing with matters of not just a policy but also kind of ministerial and clerical nature. Because that's generally the kind of rulemaking you do, the kind of necessary stuff, kind of updating things. There's very little policy that's done in rulemaking. This is the second time I've been a commissioner, and I can tell you that no commissioner wants to indulge in rulemaking in this under our system because it takes a long time. You're much better off going to the legislature and just trying to pass a bill, take it up or down. That rulemaking simply is a too cumbersome of a process. But it is needed for areas that are real, that goes into real detail, that in the non-policy policy-making type. I'll give you a couple examples from our department. One is on workers' compensation. There, the legislature requires a several provision that we update our medical fee schedule each year. And the idea behind updating the medical fee schedule is that providers are able to, you know, recover their costs. Like last year, I think we increased it by 3%. And that, there's a limit, 3 or 4% that we can increase it to. And if we weren't able to do it, and we just do it, but it's almost automatic, and we increase the number each year by rulemaking. If we weren't able to do it, we'd have to bring it to you, have to explain to you what goes into the medical fee schedule. Then you all know what happens in the legislative process. People start asking lots of questions, looking at the thing, and we may not ever pass it, and the providers will simply have to wait to get their needed fee increase. That's one small example, but I do think over a couple years period, it will add up to some real substantial costs to the medical community. Another one is on the area we do rulemaking is in our construction code and licensing division, CCLD. Right now we're working on updating the building code for the state. We generally, the international codes are updated every 3 years. We didn't update our code in 2009 because of lack of financial resources. So we haven't updated the Minnesota Building Code or the Energy Code, and there's a number of others that are subsumed under the title of Building Code. So we haven't done ours since 2006. So that means, I don't want to over-dramatize this, but it does mean that unless we update ours, you're going to have certain places in the building industry that we're not going to be caught up with places like Wisconsin, Iowa, who have updated theirs. So our people will be at a competitive disadvantage with builders and architects, engineers in other states. So I do, and with the building code as an example where we do involve a lot of people, it's not done in the dark of the night in some bureaucrat's cubicle. Instead, we involve literally hundreds of people. We have 10 different volunteer committees, task force, that look at various areas of it, that go through the international code and make the changes they think that are appropriate for Minnesota. And then what we do is take all that and go through rulemaking. In 2006, we had there was no dissent on it, so we didn't have to take it to a contested case. Everybody was sort of unanimous feeling because they had gone through this pretty thorough process. We hope to have the same thing this time in 2012. And I don't think you want to deal with stuff like building codes. it's a complex nature, and I just don't think you want to deal with that, or else we'd have to wait till 2015 to do the next one. So it's for reasons like that, I think you're best off not taking this bill, and instead, we would recommend looking at those rules which you think are outdated and getting rid of them, as opposed to just stopping the ones that are necessary to do. And if you wanted the legislative auditor to do it, or the commissioner to do it, or whatever else, I think there would be a better way of doing it rather than stopping the existing rulemaking. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
No, thank you, Commissioner. And we do have one question for you, or is it for the author? Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you, Commissioner, for coming, for bringing your concerns. My question gets at some of your concerns. I don't know if it's for Representative Hackbarth or perhaps even Ms. Newman, but my question is it, in a scenario like this, say, hypothetically, a rulemaking moratorium went into effect, would the legislature be able to grant authority to an agency by, say, you have rulemaking authority to exercise the building code in and of that, so that there may be a rulemaking coming from that, but that the legislature could still dictate that rulemaking needed to be done and leave the actual rulemaking, if granted by the legislature, to the agency?
Commissioner Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that
or
would be
Representative
true.
Hack.
That can happen.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I asked Representative Hackbarth, can you give me some specific examples of recent rulemaking or rule adoption that has halted job creation for no good reason?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, not specifically, and I don't have those. I just took over the authorship of the bill. But I do know that, there's a number of different, I'm on the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and we see, particularly through the MPCA, overburdening rules that are put in place and different hoops that companies have to jump through to get things done, and it seems to take longer and longer and longer in order for something to get done. So that's why this bill is here. I think of some of the bureaucracy that goes on in the state of Minnesota. If we can clean up some of these agencies and get them back on track, take a little break from some of these things for the next couple of years, and like the commissioner said, maybe clean up some of these obsolete rules and get rid of some of these things, give us a chance to do some of those things, putting this in place is the smart thing to do.
Representative Johnson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, those are some rather broad generalizations. It needs some rather clear specifics if the bill is going to have any merit, as far as I'm concerned. But thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hackbarth. I asked Representative Swedinsky this in government operations because it was interesting that a week before he brought this bill forward, he had a bill to allow the Minnesota Agricultural Department to promulgate rules for the animal feed industry to be able to, so they'd be able to sell their products overseas, because the federal government has fallen down on their ability to write those rules, and it's restricted businesses in our state. And if we put a temporary moratorium on them and they don't have them done by the time this bill's passed, this bill would supersede that bill, and they wouldn't be able to write those rules. So I think it's kind of interesting that, on one hand, nobody wants to have more rules out there than are necessary, but again, I've asked this question before about what rules, and when people come to me and say that we're being overburdened, they can't give me specifics of which rules they are, because we currently, in my understanding, have the ability to go in and stop those rules and by legislation deal with that problem on an individual basis instead of a blanket approach like this. It's like taking a meat axe when you need a scalpel.
Representative Sanders, to this point?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to be clear again, and perhaps Ms. Newman, maybe you could chime in here, because I want to make sure that what Representative Nelson brought up, can the legislature grant rulemaking authority during a moratorium to an agency for them to promulgate rules in a specific area?
Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the legislature could, in a variety of ways, they could notwithstand this particular law in future legislation and grant specific rulemaking authority. But you would, if there's a law enacted with a moratorium, you would legislate to notwithstand that law.
Representative Nelson? Representative Sanders? You're good? Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hackbarth, I apologize. I might have just misheard you. Is there, when you responded to Representative Johnson's question, there's got to be some example of rulemaking that prevented a job from being created. Otherwise, we wouldn't be sitting here in this bill. I heard the general part of your answer. I missed the first part. Just give me one example of a job that wasn't created as a result of some recent rulemaking.
Representative Hackbar?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Atkins, I wish I could. I don't have that. Like I said, I just took over the authorship of this bill. I'm going to be moving forward with it. I'll have the bill again in Representative Lanning's committee, and I hope to have some of those for you at that time.
Mr. Chair, I'd move that we lay the bill over.
Representative Atkins.
And I'd ask for a roll call, please.
Roll call having been requested, Representative Atkins is moving that we lay the bill over.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Sanders?
No.
Representative Atkins?
Aye.
Representative Diane Anderson?
No.
Representative Anzals?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Doubt?
No.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kiefer?
No.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Mazerell?
No.
Representative Mallory?
Yes.
Representative Murdoch?
No.
Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll?
No.
Representative Slocum? Representative Stenzer?
No.
Representative Tilbury?
Yes.
By a vote of 12 to 8, the Atkins motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair, I just have a final question there for the
Representative Atkins.
For the author, would you be kind enough then, Representative Hackbarth? I know you just took over the bill. I'd kind of like to be able to chat with you when you know what it is and you have some answers. And I'm not trying to be a smart aleck here, but you, by your own admission, you know what I'm saying? Will you plan a return visit? We're a kind of a nice resort here in the Commerce Committee. Once you've made your way back to the Finance Committee, would you be nice enough to come back this way, or ask the chair that you'd be able to come back this way so that we can ask you some questions when you have some answers?
Well, Representative Atkins, and I don't want to answer for Representative Hackbarth, but I don't think anybody's opposed to state agencies making rules. I think all of us have heard complaints from counties and cities and businesses in our districts and all over the place about a seeming proliferation of rules, and I think it's Representative Hackbarth certainly isn't up here advocating that we get rid of all rules, and he did just take over the bill, and I think we will be able to get some more information from him, and he'll find out more. He is, I think we can all agree, he's a very thorough legislator and will be a good author for the bill, and he'll have more detail for us, I'm sure.
And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hackbarth.
And thank you for that, and Representative Atkins. People ask for specifics, and I don't ask specifics, but I do know that things are happening like this. For example, up north in the mining area, there's a number of issues. I know Representative Riccovina had a bill to get rid of some rules that were hindering mining operations up there. Those kinds of things. I don't have specifics, but I can get some things like that together for you.
And Mr. Chair, on that very point, we have at the core, and I think we just decided we'll throw common sense in the trash can today. At the core of this bill was the very first point you made today, Representative Hackbarth, and that is that by doing this, by stopping rolling, it'll create jobs. So we asked you the one question, which is right on all fours at the center of this. Can you give us one example? And you're not able to do that yet. And I know you just took over the bill. I suspect that when you come back, you'll be able to do so. But this is a worthless exercise to sit here with an author that just took over a bill that doesn't know anything about it, and he's been placed in a terrible position. I don't know why, but we sit here. We've got questions. And we're not going to have any. Why have a committee hearing at all, Mr. Chairman?
Well,
should we just vote? Let's just vote. What the heck?
Well, I think
is that what this committee is about? You're not going to have any answers.
Representative Atkins, I think that would be a little unfair to the people that have come here to testify.
What difference is their testimony going to make? You just took a party line vote that says we don't care if the author knows about the bill or not.
Well, Representative Atkins, as did you. And I want
to
hear what
answers to the questions, Mr.
Well,
Chair.
I would like to hear what Commissioner Peterson and others have to say about this issue. I think it's a fairly significant bill. I think it is going to be something that moves forward, and I think it is going to be something that people around the state have been talking about.
If it's so significant, then shouldn't we have an author that's prepared to talk about the bill and answer the questions at the very heart of the bill? Isn't it too important to just send it off without even an expectation that it'll come back to the committee that has jurisdiction over it, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Atkins, if we send this out of this committee and we send it back to Representative Lanning and his committee and Representative Nelson's on it, and they make significant changes to it, if they are looking at the very heart of the bill and making those kind of changes, we will ask to have the bill back. We'll talk about it. I mean, I think this is an important issue, and I think that I want to hear what the various commissioners and others that want to testify have to say about it.
That's all I ever wanted to hear, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to hear that, and we'll look forward to having the bill back if significant changes are made. Thank you.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. just a couple of brief points. I hope the committee listened to Commissioner Peterson because those are very, very real concerns and must be considered when we get serious about this complicated bill and when we get into exemptions and what's covered and what isn't. I must say, with all due respect to my colleagues on this side and in our lead, that up north, not only have we found rules problematic in the development of northern Minnesota's natural resources, but we find rules that some commissioners implement and enforce, other administrations choose not to. That's a bad idea. That's bad. That makes it very difficult for business to do any strategic long-term planning. Furthermore, in some cases, we find the sister agency at the federal government picking and choosing which Minnesota promulgated rules that it wants to accept and enforce and preempt Minnesota rule and or statute from taking effect. And we end up giving the federal government an excuse to manage Minnesota's natural resources in a way that's not productive to economic development up north, in particular, mining and forestry. So I get the sense, Representative Hackbarth, that from a global view, you've got something here, but this has got a long way to go, and this is extremely complicated. So I think you should have voted to lay this over, frankly. Thank you.
I'm not sure who is next. Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I happen to serve on Representative Lanning's committee, and I don't totally want to speak totally for him, but I'm quite certain that the intent of that committee was to send it here for us to do our work. So to actually do changes here was my interpretation of the meeting, and perhaps it would come back to him. And there's also impacts related to health care and other areas, but there's some, you know, I just transferring that into, so I hope you consider laying it over and allow the work to be done here, because I don't think the State Finance Committee was planning on doing that work that you're maybe thinking that might happen there at that level. So I think the expectation would be that it'd be done here. The other comment is there's just some kind of what he's saying next to me as well. I mean, there's some reform that certainly probably could be adjusted, and but there's some clearly unintended consequences with regards to commerce. You know, there's just some minor tweaks that can be done. We'll probably hear about it at some point. that are done, and Minnesota doesn't necessarily want to be an island. There's changes with health care bills that come down the pike that, I mean, that doesn't necessarily affect this here committee, but I think by having a more thorough discussion here and doing the work here, we could accomplish that. So just to, you can check with Mr. Lanning, perhaps, if you want.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Representative Davids, and then Representative Dietrich after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think it is important to hear this bill and hear what the various commissioners and different state agency type folks have to say. I don't know how many of you were visited by your electric co-ops yesterday, but as far as one specific example, I'm a little caught off guard here too, because I couldn't give you one right now either, but you might want to talk to your electric cooperatives and see what's happened with rulemaking with them. One electric co-op I talked to yesterday said that in past years they'd fill out reports to comply with the rules, even they're 40 pages. Today, they're 4,400 pages. This rulemaking process is out of control. And so I hope that, and so a specific example, I'll refer to you some of the electric co-ops I talked to yesterday. That's pretty fresh in my mind. So I think there's some merit to this bill, and I'm going to support today, not because it's all ready to go and it's the way it's going to be, but I think we need to move this along the process, because what we're doing to some of our Minnesota businesses is unconscionable with the rulemaking process, and especially in the utilities area, especially in the electric generation area, especially Representative Ansells is right on with what he said. So I think we, you know, this is a very serious one-page bill. We're not going to solve all the problems on this here today, but I think we need to hear from folks. And, Mr. Chairman, thank you for allowing the people to speak here as they come up. But there's some real problems, and if we want specifics, we'll get you specifics. Be happy to do that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to reiterate what you were saying about the importance of this bill, and I wish that we would have kept it here a little longer. From the Small Business Caucus standpoint, you know, we asked 2 years ago, we asked for a bill, we had a bill that passed that did a small business study across five states in different areas. And one of the resounding messages that we had out of that that study was that small businesses called state agencies and they kept getting mixed answers. They could never get a straight answer. And so one does ask, is this related to constant rulemaking changes and that type of thing? And so then one needs to ask, is a two-year moratorium actually a fix, or will that just then in 2 years open up the floodgates and they'll just have a whole slew more? But I do think that it is a problem, and I'm glad that somebody is at least willing to have the discussion, and especially in regards to our small businesses. And I would strongly recommend that the author get a hold of the executive summary of that study and just take a look at it, because it's a very strong message that it's very difficult to have business startups here because they can't get straight answers on the rules and regulations.
Representative Davids. Representative Dietrich, were you done? Thank you for your comments. Representative Davids?
I'll go through the chair, of course, but two things. First of all, Representative Dietrich, what was that report you cited, the executive summary?
Representative Dietrich.
It is a small business study comparing five different states in regulations and costs of startup businesses. It was it came out of the Small Business Caucus 2 years ago, and we just got the results of the study at the end of January. And Kim Norton has the executive summary. I still don't have a copy of it, but at some point we have asked that the study be shared with the larger body.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Dietrich, that's point number one, and I will talk to Representative Norton to get a copy of that. And second of all, I was a bit concerned about Vice Chairman Sanders' comments asking, you know, if the Commerce Committee could do something. And as former chairs know, we're the Commerce Committee, and we can do whatever we'd like. Never forget that.
Thank you for reminding us of that, Representative Davids. We should always all remember that. With that, members, I think it's been a good discussion. Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. And why don't we have some other people come down and shed light on the bill. I do think that we all, to one extent or another, agree about rules. We might not necessarily agree about the length of the moratorium or this particular bill, but let's let Representative Hackbarth work on it, and we'll see if we can come up with something good here. Welcome back to the committee. If you want to identify yourself again for the record, Ms. Brace, and please start when you're ready.
Yes, thank you. My name is Twyla Brace, President of Citizens Council for Health Freedom, and we were very happy to see this bill come up from Representative Swedinsky and now from Representative Hackbarth. I guess some of the things I'd like to just say is about regulations. And we've had to deal with a lot of regulations, our organization putting in public comments and all sorts of other things, trying to get agencies to switch what they're doing. But once it gets out of the legislature and into the regulatory agencies, they get to decide what to do. And unless you all figure it out or unless there's an administrative law judge that decides differently and you can get enough public comments, that essentially has the full force and effect of law, even though it didn't go through any elected officials. So I just want to say that there's the cost to government of doing regulations, and every taxpayer pays that. Then I do believe there are unfunded, that the regulatory requirements are unfunded mandates on any businesses that they are on, which of course is a cost to those businesses. Nobody is paying them to figure out how to do those rules or to the manpower that it takes to put those in. We are concerned about the fact of rulemaking, that it transfers legislative authority to unelected folks in government agencies. And in just as one example, it has been noted that in Congress, 9/10 of the laws that are passed are actually by the regulators. Congress only passes 1/10 of the laws. So I thought it was interesting what, I guess it was the commissioner who said that if you actually bring something to you, the legislators talk about it, and then it might never happen. Well, there might be a reason it doesn't happen, because all of you are representing the people, and the regulators aren't. And so I think that that is a protection for individuals. I like Representative Dietrich's comments just about small business, because I think it's a very real thing. And from our organization's perspective, we have found in a lot of rulemaking that there is, as opposed to what Commissioner Peterson said, a lot of policy making that happens through the rulemaking that is not in law anywhere. So I would, and we've dealt with expedited rulemaking, which means that we can't do anything as an organization. We can't even get it before an administrative law judge. And so we've had lots of changes that we've had to deal with and been able to do absolutely nothing about. One little rule, one little statement in a law, and out of that comes pages and pages and pages of regulations that nobody had anything to say about. So the last thing I'll leave you with, which is maybe just kind of an amusing comment, is the fact that the more regulations there are, it would seem to me, the more jobs that are created in the government agencies. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Davids.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I just like to state in the record that I agree with Ms. Brace's comments in their entirety.
Thank you, Representative Davids. We'll make sure that the tape accurately reflects your agreement with her comments.
Thank you.
Other questions, members? Otherwise, we've got other folks that want to come down and speak. Whether you want to speak in favor or opposed to the bill or have any suggestions for us or for the author, feel free to come on down. Sir, please identify yourself for the tape and start whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, Peter Brickwoody from the Department of Commerce. I'll keep my testimony along the lines that you suggested in talking about the regulatory environment in the state. As committee members know, the Commerce Department's mission is to protect the public interest and ensure a fair and competitive marketplace. And to that end, Commerce maintains a comparatively modest but robust rule portfolio in comparison to other state agencies. And much of that portfolio helps Minnesota businesses by ensuring consistent regulation across the state as well as across states. And in that regard, I'd echo some of what Commissioner Peterson's remarks were concerning his agency. And to that end, you know, inconsistency can put Minnesota businesses at a competitive disadvantage and create difficulties for Minnesota consumers. And I think it would be instructive, Mr. Chair, to just very quickly touch on the four rulemaking processes that the department has in the pipeline currently that are planned for the period of time that would be subject to the two-year moratorium. We have four currently planned or far enough along in the pipeline to expect them to take place in fiscal year 13 or fiscal year 14, two dealing with insurance, one from our Weights and Measures Division and another from the Petro Fund, and I'll touch on each of them very briefly, starting with the Petro Fund. The Petro Fund exists, and members may recall this from last year's discussion of extending the Petro Fund, which we're thankful to the legislature for doing. It reimburses costs incurred by eligible applicants for investigating and cleaning up contamination from leaking petroleum storage tanks underground, primarily. And there are cost containment rules that were promulgated by the department to safeguard the program by prescribing competitive bidding requirements and specifying maximum reimbursement amounts for investigation and cleanup work. It also lays out the process for obtaining reimbursement from the fund. We are looking to do an update of the Petro Fund rules, particularly to the cost containment challenges. And if we were unable to do that, and it's the department's belief that based on the language in the bill that we would not meet the standard put forward by the good cause exemption, that there would be difficulty for applicants, many of which are businesses or companies looking to redevelop sites, who would end up paying higher out-of-pocket costs for the investigation and cleanup work covered in the program. Similarly, the insurance group is working on updates to two chapters of rules dealing with actuarial opinions and related documentation pertaining to companies' valuation of reserves. And a delay in those implementation of those rules would provide some difficulty for the insurance division in their oversight role, monitoring at reserve adequacy among Minnesota companies, and make it difficult for them to fulfill its mission to monitor companies' solvency. And in the Weights and Measures Division, we make fairly regular updates to one of the chapters updating to national standards. We do that about every 10 years in this particular case. And failure to update them leaves Minnesota potentially as a dumping ground for equipment that has been precluded in other states that have adopted that national standard. And so those are just a couple of examples of issues that perhaps are not immediately top of mind when we're talking about rulemaking across state agencies. But for the Commerce Department, in order to fulfill our mission, they do provide quite a vital role. And while there may not be a cost necessarily to the department, there would be the potential, very strong potential, for costs to Minnesota businesses and consumers by waiting for or 2 years to make those updates, and it would potentially put us out of alignment with neighboring states and how they regulate similar programs within their borders. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd stand for any questions.
Thank you. Any members or any questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
For the chief author. Representative Hackbarth, you heard the, I think, relatively reasonable points that Mr. Brickwoody made, as well as Commissioner Peterson before him. Would you have any problem creating exemptions for example, the workers' compensation medical fee schedule, the CCLD, the Petro Fund, insurance company reserve rules, and the weights and measures? If we don't adopt those exemptions, we put our businesses at a distinct, as I heard it, at a disadvantage. The four items and then the work comp one would put our doctors and providers at a disadvantage if we don't update those. If we had those prepared as an amendment, would you speak kindly to that sort of amendment?
Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Atkins, a number of folks have come to me and talked to me about this bill and different issues that they have. I'm willing to look at all of those different things, and we'll see as the bill progresses. Like I said, I just took over the authorship of the bill. A number of folks have come and talked to me about this. I know that there's problems within different agencies with the language that we have so far. I know that there's going to have to be some exemptions placed here or there. We're going to look at all those things as the bill progresses.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Thank you, Mr. Brickwoody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
Mr. Meyer, welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, please proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, members for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources, and thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I don't get in front of the Commerce Committee too much, so I do appreciate the opportunity. I'm going to focus real briefly on the bill, and also I've been asked by the administration just to speak generally about the impacts to the entire executive branch, and I'm handing out a letter, which I'll refer to then. And I have spoke to Representative Hackbarth about the commerce impacts on the Department of Natural Resources. The bill in its current form would prohibit any hunting and fishing seasons for 2 years once it's passed, because we do all of our season setting for fishing, all of our deer, wolf, turkey, not wolf yet, hopefully wolf, sorry, deer, turkey, bear, things like that by rule. So we need to address that, otherwise we will not have any hunting or fishing seasons while this bill is in place. So there does have a huge economic impact at that level. We have a specific rulemaking authority in Chapter 84 for the commissioner to do that. The letter I'm handing out refers specifically to a bill, House File 203, that Governor Dayton vetoed last year. And I've also attached a copy of a letter dated May 27, 2003, from Governor Plenty at the time relating to rulemaking and legislative approval. But the overall context is just the authority of usurping the executive branch's opportunity to do rulemaking. Governor Dayton's letter kind of paraphrases Governor Plenty's letter, but the last sentence of the letter I'm just going to point out is that I will strongly safeguard the long-established principles of executive agency rulemaking and regulatory authority. This is very important to an effective and efficient executive branch operating. While we talk about stopping rules, the bill doesn't repeal any rules that may be causing harm to businesses and things like that. And I would much rather spend time with the legislature talking about specific rules that may be impeding commerce or causing job creation to be slow or non-existent. In northern Minnesota, for example, we're talking about rules related to water quality standards. I'm not sure what the impact of this bill would have on that. But let's spend some time talking about what it is we want to change rather than stopping all of the rules that are out there. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity, and I do just want to make sure that people understand the severe economic impacts to the bill as it currently stands to the recreational part of our state.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer, and we appreciate both the brevity of your comments, the high-level nature of your comments, and the reference to the wolf season. Representative Lilly.
Mr. Chair, I just wonder if the author has a comment in regards to, as a former or as the chair of the Environmental Committee, just shutting down our hunting season and fishing. I mean, clearly that's a big impact. I just wonder if you have a comment. I'm trying to give you a softball here.
Representative Hackbarth.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And this is something that we had a little brief discussion before this hearing today, and those are some of the comments that I made, and they are of concern to me. And as I said with other statements, these are some of the things that we have to look at as this bill progresses to make some changes and tweaking the bill. I've talked to Mr. Meyer about that and to the chairman of this committee, and I will be talking to Representative Lanning about the same types of issues.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hackbarth. Last night I had the opportunity to be at a banquet with you, and I can't imagine being at that banquet if we'd shut down hunting and fishing. But I don't know how to do this. I guess I've never done this before. I'm curious, can I adjust the motion that we have before us to re-refer this bill to the Environmental Committee? Because it seems to me to make sense that, I mean, that it makes a stop there if it's to address some of those issues.
Well, Representative Lilly,
instead of going back,
going to
having, you know, since I serve on stake of finance, if you look at I had an opportunity just to kind of look at our DFL cheat sheets about what happened again, so it kind of refreshed my memory, and it did kind of say that, you know, it's probably going to have to go to every committee was kind of the DFL approach, and then Chair Lanning did not seem to disagree to that. So I guess that's what I'm trying to facilitate the process.
Representative Lilly, first of all, I don't think any of us are going to do anything to prohibit Minnesota having hunting and fishing seasons, and I think that's one of the things that Representative Hackbarth is going to work on.
Right.
And hopefully we can also get this to the point where it doesn't have to go to, it's broad enough and generic enough and a high-level overview enough so that it doesn't have to go to every committee in the House. And that's something that, again, Representative Hackbarth is new on, and let's give him a chance to do that and get the bill in the shape he wants, and hopefully we can avoid both not having a hunting season and hunting seasons and having to go to every single committee.
So you'd prefer I don't do a motion?
I would prefer that you don't. I'd rather just...
Even though I don't really know how to do it.
Well, no, and it, it's certainly within your purview to... and I don't entirely disagree with you, but I think rather than if we do that, then we could also move that it could go to transportation or you know any of the other committees as well. Let's let Representative Hackbarth take it back and try to do the high-level overview, and hopefully he can get it fixed to the point where we all love it and everybody votes yes. It'll be fun, trust me. Thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you.
Next up, please come on down and state your name for the record and start whenever you're ready, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dick Kruger. I'm the executive director of the Racing Commission. Throughout Chapter 240, which is the pari-mutuel legislation, the legislature has given us very broad rulemaking authority from pari-mutuel pools, pari-mutuel betting, licensing, breeders' fund activity, medication, and just an overall rulemaking authority. And all of it, and I wish Representative Biskins or Beard were here, but all of it is specific to the racetrack. It very, literally none of it affects the local community or local businesses. Once we have gotten a rule packet done, it goes... is processed through the APA, and there is language in the APA that the revisor's copy on the sonar is presented to the chairs of the Finance Committee and Policy Committees in both the Senate and the House, and we have been doing that for years and have never gotten any feedback from any of those committees. I'm going to give you an example of one thing I've been working on. I've been collaborating with the Jockeys Guild for about the past year and a half to come up with some better standards for safety helmets and vests. And, you know, if this bill were to pass, I'd hate to call them and tell them that I can't do anything more for the next 2 years. And, you know, that's a serious safety issue regarding horse racing. I can go over the process of how we do our rules. It's all at open meetings. Our racing committee reviews the rules, takes them to the full commission for action. Sometimes we react to rules that are brought to us by the racetracks or the horsemen and women's organization. It's not just coming from the, quote, the regulator. So I just wanted to point some of that out to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Kruger. We appreciate it. Members, any questions? I don't see any. Thank you, Mr. Kruger. We appreciate it. Anybody else like to come down and speak for or against the bill?
I have an amendment that I have being copied.
I'll talk slow.
How far away is the copy machine?
Representative Loon.
Well, Mr. Chair, since we have a little lull in the action here, I actually just have a question, so I'll pose it. And I'm not sure if to the author, to Representative Hackbarth, or actually to staff. And it was actually one of the points brought up by one of our testifiers with regards to the legislature being able to, you know, put forth legislation to repeal, you know, rules and regulations on statute. I'm wondering, is there a process by which the agencies, I mean, certainly as we pass laws, regulations are promulgated, but they can also promulgate regulations in the absence of new laws being passed, just on statutes on the books, but is there a regular process where agencies go through and look at what they've got on the books and themselves, through almost a reverse rulemaking, if you will, take things off?
Are you looking for Mr. Shepard? He's hiding behind the American flag, which none of us can complain about. We all do. Mr. Shepard, welcome. If you could identify yourself for the record and shed some light on that Representative Loon's question for us, we'd appreciate it.
Hello, Mr. Chair and Representative Loon. Mark Shepard from the House Research Department. There is the only process that relates to regular review of rules by agencies relates to a process for repealing obsolete rules. Agencies are required to review their rules and submit reports on if they find rules are obsolete. And in fact, those are reported annually. The reviser of statutes collects them, and then there's a very expedited process for repealing rules that agencies believe to be obsolete. But other than that, there's not a process for agencies to regularly re-justify or look at their rules unless there were. The agencies would always be free to take the initiative to do that, or the legislature could require them to do that, but otherwise it's not mandated in law.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you, Mr. Shepard. That's very helpful. But there's nothing, if I heard you correct your last statement, there's nothing in statute that would prohibit the agencies from doing that currently. Is that correct?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, that is correct. An agency that has authority to adopt rules also has authority to amend or repeal those rules. Amendments or repeals are considered rules, and they'd have to go through the regular rulemaking process to amend or repeal a rule.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Representative Loon.
If I could, Mr. Chair, and if you want me to stop because I think we have the amendment coming, I'll be happy to suspend and ask Mr. Shepard offline. But I had one other question. Is there a kind of a standard amount of time that the rulemaking process takes from the initial inception of a rule to when it's put into place?
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, there is not a standard amount of time. There are various procedural requirements in the rulemaking process, and if an agency went through the entire process just based on those timelines, it would probably take at least 6 months, say, in the normal process. But agencies typically, for a complex set of rules, take much longer, basically not in the process itself, but in the process of consulting with stakeholders or developing or writing the rules. And that, I think, is where you get a lot of variation in the time. For a complex set of rules, it might take an agency a long time to develop the rules at the beginning before the formal process even starts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Mr. Shepard, I might have missed this in your subsequent answers, but going back to your first response, talking about how all agencies have to look and see which rules are obsolete, is there a way that people determine that different agencies do it differently, or is there a standard way that people determine? I mean, who gets to say what's obsolete and when it becomes obsolete?
Mr. Chair and members, it is basically a judgment of the agency itself, and if anyone wants to look at the statute, it's Section 14.05, Subdivision 5. It requires a report by December 1st of each year, and they're to report to the governor, the Legislative Coordinating Commission, and to the relevant policy committees a list of rules or portions of rules that are obsolete, unnecessary, or duplicative of other state or federal rules. And Mr. Paul Marinak in the reviser's office annually compiles this. He recently sent me a link of the recent December 1 reports, and if anyone is interested, I could send it to you, or you could contact Mr. Marinak.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. And I'm not trying to point fingers at any particular agency. I'm just curious, is there... I know that some agencies have more rules and more rulemaking than others, but are there certain agencies that typically send lots of rules in that they think are obsolete and some that have just sort of rules that don't ever get old?
Mr. Chair and members, I mean, just off the top of my head, I think agencies are relatively conservative about classifying rules as obsolete. I think they classify things as obsolete if it's been, you know, if the legislature's repealed the law or changed it so much that the rules aren't necessary anymore, if there's been a federal law that changes the regulatory environment. I don't think they generally use this process to make sort of policy-type revisions that the stakeholder communities would be interested in. So I don't think the ones that I've reviewed, I can't really say that there's a lot of agencies that use it a lot or that don't use it. I think it probably depends on the factors that apply to each agency every year.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Any other questions from members? Representative Van Zyl.
Yeah, I can't resist the chance to, you know, the agencies are under tremendous pressure from the stakeholders, the conflicting stakeholders. And there are rules that need to be promulgated by the agencies that are based on some change with their sister agency at the federal level. But please don't underestimate the staff, the time, and the competence that's required for these agencies to promulgate these rules in what we would consider to be a reasonable time frame. And lastly, you know, there are consequences to the budgetary cuts that we've had to make, and the agencies simply don't have the staff required, in my judgment, to move a lot of these rules along at a pace that we would agree with. So keep that in mind as this whole topic develops here.
Thank you, Representative Van Zyl. Any further questions for members? If not, we have an amendment. Representative Atkins, to your amendment. And first, does everybody have a copy of the amendment? Representative Hackbarth, did you get it? Everybody seen it? Representative Atkins.
Okay. And, Mr. Chair, my appreciation to Ms. Newman for helping me with the drafting and to our page for being kind enough to make some copies. I figured it's the sort of amendment that would be more helpful rather than do it orally if I had it in writing, so that I appreciate the committee's patience.
Well, Representative Atkins, the committee appreciates her handwriting as well.
And I think it speaks for itself. We've had testimony on several items, you know, the workers' compensation, medical fee schedule. What I did was try to carve out a few of the exemptions that we heard about today. The first one, work comp, is for the physicians and for the providers. The next four in a row are three, building codes, Petrofund, and weights and measures. We had testimony that all those are pro-business. They actually save businesses money, and they've been working in a process to adopt rules to get them up to date with federal standards, for example, which will save businesses money. Number six is to just make sure that we can still hunt and fish. And I do have one slight alteration, Mr. Chair. It would, where it's number six, after it says hunting and fishing, it'd say hunting and fishing rules. So insert the word rules before the word necessary. And then finally, number seven, we heard testimony from the Racing Commission, and I would add this to my amendment. So it'd be number seven, and it would state rules that apply to jockeys and veterinarians at Canterbury Park and running aces. And I'll repeat that once more. Rules that apply to jockeys and veterinarians at Canterbury Park and running aces. I've heard lots of things about Canterbury Park and running aces and the challenges that they have. The last thing we want to do is cause them more problems financially. And so this would exempt Canterbury Park and running aces from this rule as well. And, Mr. Chair, I'd appreciate a roll call.
Roll call was requested. And just to make sure everyone is clear on the amendment, in line six, after hunting and fishing, we are going to insert the word rules. A line seven, which will be new, seven, rules that apply to jockeys and veterinarians at Canterbury Park and running aces. Representative Atkins, did I get that right?
Yep.
We have those changes? Representative Hackbarth, do you want to say a word about the amendment?
I do, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. Members, just like this bill, as I said when I came in here, the bill needs some work, and I admit that. And the bill was written as a blanket. The bill was written as a blanket bill to put a stop to all rulemaking. And I understand that there's going to be some exemptions, and I said that in my opening remarks. Why this is happening, I don't know. Why we're jockeying back and forth like this, I don't understand it. I tried to tell people that I was going to work on the bill, and try to fix the bill. I know that there's agencies that have rulemaking that needs to proceed to keep government functioning. The purpose of the bill is to wake up some of these agencies and let's get rid of some of these restrictive regulations that are stopping businesses from moving forward and providing jobs. And I made those statements in my opening remarks. I understand that there are things that have to take place in rulemaking every year to make government function. To have a haphazard amendment written down and kind of on the fly and not addressing the actual issues that need to be addressed, I think is wrong. And why it's happening, I don't know. I tried to say to folks that we're going to work on these things. So I don't think it's a good amendment. I don't think it's a well-put-together amendment. It addresses some of the concerns that we heard about today, but I don't think it's specific. It's specific enough to get to what actually has to take place. I want to work to make the bill better. I don't want to just an on-the-fly amendment to try to make some kind of a statement. So I would oppose the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that we lay the amendment on the table.
Representative Davids moves that we lay the Atkins amendment on the table.
We'd ask for a roll call, please.
Roll call having been requested.
Representative Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative Sanders.
Aye.
Representative Atkins.
No.
Representative Diane Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Anzels.
Nope.
Representative Crawford.
Aye.
Representative Dowd. Representative Davids.
Yes.
Representative Dietrich.
No.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Kiefer.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Loon.
Yes.
Representative Mazerell.
Yes.
Representative Mullery. Representative Murdoch.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Slocum. Representative Stensrud.
Yes.
Representative Tilbury.
By a vote of 11-6, the Davids motion prevails. With that, we are back on the bill.
Just to the
Representative
bill, and Mr. Chair, and I appreciate what just happened, and that is a yes vote. Then, if we don't pass the amendment, a yes vote on this bill, as I understand it, not as I understand it, as Representative Hackbarth has represented it, would provide that workers' compensation medical fee schedule is not updated. The Minnesota Building Code's not updated. Petra Fund regulations are not updated. Weights and measures changes necessary to update to the federal standard, not updated. Hunting and fishing rules necessary to allow for hunting and fishing seasons would not go into place, which would result in the expiration or cancellation of our hunting and fishing seasons. And the rules, and it would not apply to the rules that apply to jockeys and veterinarians at the Canterbury Park and running aces. That strikes me as a really bad vote. And if that's what folks want to vote for, more power to you. But I suggest, without the assurance that the bill is coming back here, then passing out of this committee a bill like that, that would do things as outrageous as enabling the hunting and fishing rules necessary to have a hunting and fishing season to not go into place. I don't want to take that vote. I'm absolutely a no, and I'd suggest that everybody ought to be a no on this one until the bill comes back in a form that takes into account some of those absolutely egregious harms that would occur as a result of voting for this bill.
Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I look at it just a bit different than my good friend, Representative Atkins. This vote to me has meaning. This vote to me means that the discussion will continue. And we will have a lot more information down the road. We're not, by this vote, we're not shutting down any hunting seasons. We're not shutting down any issues on weights and measures or anything to do with anything. What this vote means to me is that the discussion will continue, and I think this is a really good vote to take, and I can't wait.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and in support of Representative David's effort to have more thought and work done on the bill, I'd like to re-refer the bill to the Environment Committee and Natural Resources and Finance Committee.
Mr. Chairman?
I'd like a roll call.
Mr. Chairman?
Well, we have had a motion to by Representative Lilly to re-refer the bill to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Committee.
I don't want to shut down the hunting.
Is that non-debatable?
I believe that is non-debatable.
Okay.
Well, and a roll call was requested on that.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Sanders?
No.
Representative Adkins?
Absolutely.
Representative Diane Anderson?
No.
Representative Anzels?
Yes.
Representative Crawford?
No.
Representative Davids?
No.
Representative Dietrich?
No.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kiefer?
No.
Representative Lilly?
Yes.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Mazerall?
No.
Representative Mullery?
So they just
vote. Representative Murdoch? Representative Nelson?
Yes.
Representative O'Driscoll? Representative O'Driscoll?
Pass.
Representative Stensrud?
No.
Mr. Chair, I believe some members passed.
Representative O'Driscoll, what was your vote?
By a vote of 12-5, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Davids.
To the bill, so I just want to clarify something. So the vote we just took, the Lilly vote we just took, will shut down the hunting and fishing season, and we just sent that to the Environment Committee. Just a comment.
Well, Representative Davids, just the opposite. We're not sending that to the Environment Committee.
But a yes vote would have done that.
A yes vote would have sent that to the Environment Finance Committee, where the bill would have been further worked on, as it will be in the committee that we're sending to Representative Lanning's committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further, Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I voted yes, and you know, I don't want to send it to places we don't have to send it. But again, this bill is taking a meat axe, using a meat axe for surgery instead of a scalpel. I hope that Representative Hackbarth is a man of his word, that we do get this worked on in that committee, and we get the exceptions carved out, because the way this looks now, it's a very bad bill, and I voted against it in government operations. Because of that, it's too broad of an approach. The only fear I have is we've seen other bills. I've seen other bills go through committees that's been told by authors that they're going to work on them, to make them better, and then we see them on the floor and they're passed just the way I saw them in committee. So I hope this does come back. I do hope when we see this in the future that it does have the exceptions carved out, and that is not just the same one-page bill that we have now, because I don't think this is good for the state of Minnesota.
Representative Nelson, I think most of us concur with that, and I think we can trust Representative Hackbarth to work on it and come back with something better. I think of everybody in this room, clearly Representative Hackbarth, as much or more than anybody else, wants to make sure that we have hunting seasons next year.
Mr. Chair, we'd ask for a roll call on the bill, please.
Roll call having been requested. Representative Atkins, you want a final word before we take the roll call vote?
Nope.
With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2211 be passed and sent to State Government Finance. Roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Hoppe?
Aye.
Representative Sanders?
Aye.
Representative Adkins?
Nope.
Representative Diane Anderson?
Yes.
Representative Anzels?
No.
Representative Crawford?
Aye.
Representative Davids?
Yes.
Representative Dietrich?
Yes.
Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Kiefer?
Yes.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Loon?
Yes.
Representative Mazerell?
Yes.
Representative Murdoch?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Yes.
Representative Stensrud?
Yes.
By a vote of 12-5, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and sent on to the State Gov Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, with that, I think we are adjourned.